If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We Do can it. Go live while we're talking about the fact that P.F. Chang's fell off because they're not as good anymore.
They are not. They used to see, look. We're like, I'm married to an authentic Chinese woman.
Yeah.
So we generally authentic Chinese food. And we used to go to P.F. Chang's early on and be like, this shit is only 70% garbage. It's not bad. Now it's 100% garbage.
Yeah, I used to really like it. Now it's pretty bad. By the way, you want to talk about gentrification. You know what the PF stands for? Most people don't know this.
Isn't it like Peter Francis or something?
Paul Fleming. Yeah,
what the fuck?
It's a white guy, you know? Paul Fleming Chang's. That would be like me opening a place being like, Tom Heineberg Chang's. It's not okay.
Dude, we should totally open a place like that. And you could have a dollar menu. Because it's like, to get in the riffraff. Hey guys, it's supporters. What up? This is just for you because the rest of the world doesn't deserve us like this. Dirty.
That's true.
Uncensored.
And we're going to be reading your comments.
Mm-hmm, your questions. Mm-hmm.
Unless they're dumb, and then we won't read them.
Yep, in which case, we'll just talk about me the whole time and my 20th anniversary UCSF medical school graduation.
Oh, this is right.
I'm going
They're
tomorrow.
Giving you a major award, are they not?
It's my major award, Tom Heine. You were always jealous of my major award.
I'm going to put it in the front room so the whole neighborhood can see.
Right here. Look at that.
You know what I love about that movie is, for anybody who doesn't know, A Christmas Story.
Christmas Story.
The greatest movie of all time.
Yep.
Is the way the kid describes that lamp, the leg lamp. He's like, the sweet glow of electric sex illuminating the window.
They don't make movies like that anymore,
it's
man.
It's so good.
Yeah, so 1999, I graduate UCSF. So I get this message like in January. They're like, you've won a major award. And I'm like, okay, and like innovator of the whatever, I forget what it was. And I'm like, okay. And they're like, now you should come to your 20th reunion. It's the alumni association, yeah. Right? So they want you to come and like shill for their people to donate to the thing. And I'm like, well, I've never really done anything for UCSF properly because I'm still scarred by the entire experience of medical school. So maybe I should show up. So yes, I'm going to go on Saturday. I'm going to see the 20 classmates out of 140 that are going.
Does it feel crazy that it's been 20 years since you've been in medical school?
I'm so old now, Tom Heineberg, nothing feels crazy. Right. You could tell me it was 50 years. I'd be like, yeah, probably. I still remember. So when I graduated, I had to give that speech that kind of opened up the possibility of becoming an internet thing because I eventually put it on the internet webs. Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Series of tubes.
Mm-hmm.
And
Al Gore invented them.
After graduating and doing the speech, me and my dad, we were in downtown San Francisco, went to the AMC theater in downtown and watched the world premiere of The Phantom Menace. And I remember coming out of the movie going, was I supposed to like that? I'm a big Star Wars fan, but something wasn't right with that movie. I don't know. I still like it, though. Trying to convince myself that was a great movie. And in my mind, I was just, that's what I was hearing, is a duel of the fates, because that was the dopest part of the whole thing.
It is.
And I think I cried myself to sleep that night. And so that's what I remember about 20 years past. But yeah, so me and Dr. Harry are going, Dr. Harry's wife.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be fun. We're going to have cocktails. My buddy Todd Whitehurst, who works at Google now.
You're such an old man. You're like excited. You're like, we're going to have cocktails. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
I'm going to have cocktails with some of my old classmates. We're going to catch up, tell some war stories. It's going to be really dope, man. God, I suck so much, man. Let's read some fucking comments. I was in seventh grade in 1999. Fuck you, Charity Trowell, for being so young.
I was in fifth grade in 1999. So I got you beat, girl.
Oh, snap. The youth. The youth. Diane Hayes. Tom, reenact the German Shepherd kicking. Oh, no. Tell this story.
Well, here's a story. So I have a little tiny dog. He's a King Charles Cavalier. He's adorable. He's a perfect little gentleman, in case anybody's wondering. And we were walking him around the neighborhood, and, you know, a neighbor's gate had blown open, and they have a German Shepherd. And this fool lunged out from a bush at my dog, you know, like teeth, you know, gnarled, ready to bite my dog. And so I kicked the shit out of it. Like,
nice.
I soccer kicked this dog. Because for people who don't know, listen, I'm a country boy, grew up in Arkansas. The way you break up a fight between two dogs, usually two aggressive dogs, but this is, in this case, this was basically going to be a murder. The way you break up a fight between two aggressive dogs is you find the bigger, more aggressive dog, and you just kick it as hard as you can in the ribs, and it ends the fight.
Mm.
Because otherwise, if you don't, the dogs are going to kill each other.
Right.
In this case, it would have just been the German Shepherd killing my dog.
Right.
So I kicked it really hard, and I had to go explain to the neighbor, like, hey, bro.
How did that go? Yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, first of all, why the fuck is your dog out and attacking my dog?
Right.
Second of all, you know, you're probably going to have to go get your dog looked at because I, like, really did kick it super hard.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Nice.
So if it's acting funny, I might have broken its rib.
Right.
Yeah.
Ooh. Man, that's tough. You know, when you told me this story, my first instinct was you should have murdered that dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if a dog comes attacking my pet, that's, like, grounds for, like, stand your ground and murder the animal.
Yeah.
Right? But then there was part of me that was like, oh, you know, these are dogs. They don't know any better. They're behaving instinctually. But it's like, well, what are you going to do? Your dog's going to die.
Well, what are you going
to
do?
Your dog's going
to
die.
Once a dog shows aggression to a person, they kill the dog immediately.
They murder it.
That's how I feel.
Right.
And if it shows aggression to another dog, that warrants a pretty hard kick, in my opinion.
Right.
Now, I don't kick my dog at home or anything. I'm not, like, a fan of kicking dogs. But, like, if it's, you know,
the
dog is about to be hurt.
Yeah, it was just like children. You're not supposed to hit kids unless they're in imminent danger, and you need to. Yeah, you need to stop them. Z, you know you're going to miss Vegas summers, Michelle Flores. Michelle, yes, I am, because we sold our house. Although we're in contract, so we have to, like, you know, be very circumspect because at any point it could all fall through if there's this loan contingencies and appraisal contingencies and all kinds of motherfucking contingencies, but. We're hopefully going to be back in the Bay by the fall, it's going to be a trip. But I'm going to keep flying back to Vegas because we still have this studio for quite some time, and I'm going to be based here really still. So I won't be missing the summer, Michelle. I'm going to be deep in the game with no swimming pool.
Regina says she's not a reunion person. She graduated high school in 71 and nursing school in 75 and never attended the reunions.
So
I have never attended a reunion either.
So let me be honest with you. Yeah. I've never fucking attended any reunion of any kind, and I wasn't intending to go to this. But now I have to retrieve Tom Heinerberg, my major award, and the chancellor. I have to have breakfast with the chancellor and do all this stuff. And so it's like now it's a song and dance. And here's the thing about this. Part of me is very honored and is like, oh, this was, you know, this was my alma mater and so, and they did a lot for me. And then part of me is like, well, oh, now they pay attention to me that I've got some internet clout.
Yes.
And so of course they want me to come, and of course they're going to give me an award because it's going to draw more alumni donors.
Totally.
So I don't know how to feel about it, honestly.
You know, there's a law of the universe that people should internalize, which is you get no success or you get no help until you have success. Mm. And then once you have success, you don't need the help anymore. Right?
Yeah.
But then it comes.
Then it comes. Exactly.
And, you know, that's just how it always goes.
It's just like sex.
It's like, where were you when I needed you?
Right. Like, nothing's happening in your life.
Right.
No women, men, whoever it is you're into, nothing. And then you start dating somebody.
Yeah, then all of a sudden.
And then all of a sudden,
you're
20
attractive
people want to have sex with you.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's a very interesting and wonderful thing.
The only reunion I would have gone to was the 10-year high school reunion. Seems like a good one to hook up with people. But I was not single at the time, so I didn't go.
And you're only 28.
Yeah.
So you still have high testosterone.
Because that's when you can actually go back and capitalize on some of that. You didn't love me back then. Look at me now.
Look at me now.
You know?
The problem is
I'm going to rent a Ferrari to show up here.
At 28, I was a depressed resident with no sleep.
Totally.
I've been, look at me now, bitch.
Look at me now, I'm sad.
I loved you back then. Now, I still love you, kind of. I hate my life.
Alex says, they're reporting on the news that there's this new cure for cancer, and some patients are in remission, and apparently the cure goes through your whole body and kills cancer.
Right. Uh-huh, whatever.
No.
Listen, how many times have we heard this?
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I want to believe it. Mm-hmm. Is cancer the final boss?
What do you mean? Oh, the final boss that we face as a like Donkey Kong.
Yeah. Like, are we just never going to be able to outsmart cancer?
No, I think we will. I think what it is, though, is that we fundamentally misunderstand it. Okay, there's two possibilities. And Peter Attia talks about this, too. Either we fundamentally misunderstand cancer because it's so complex. No, sorry. Let me back up. Either we fundamentally misunderstand cancer and it's not that complex. We're just getting it all wrong. Cancer is whatever, but we've been getting it wrong. Or we do kind of understand cancer. It's just so complex that there's so many moving parts. It's a series of mutations. There's epigenetics. There's an evolutionary Darwinistic component where it's evolving over time. It's becoming resistant to chemo, and then it's doing this. It's interacting with the immune system. You have oxygen delivery and vascularization, neovascularization, all these complex things. So we're, as Peter Attia has said, it's one of the most complex things you can ever do. So maybe we just need AI or we need the next set of complexity management to manage it. But I think it's beatable for sure. Yeah, 100%. There's nothing that isn't really solvable.
You know what I don't think I ever internalized that cancer was just a bunch of growths inside of you. Like, I never really internalized that until I saw somebody die of cancer. And then I was like, oh, that's fucking terrifying.
Right.
That's terrifying.
And you know what's crazy?
That's not just your body breaking down. That's like, that's terrible.
It's the worst.
Ugh.
It's the worst. And I think it's partially because, okay, if you imagine your body as a galaxy, like this system of cooperating subunits, then what cancer is it's a series of the subunits that have, they've lost their ability to understand that they are not only a autonomous unit, but a part of a whole. Mm. They now decide we are just an autonomous unit. And by doing so, they destroy the cohesion of the entire community of cells and the systems that make up our body. In many ways, it's kind of what the anti-vaxxers are doing. They're saying, we no longer accept this social covenant to vaccinate. We disagree with the body at large that this is good for us, and we're going to not do it. And then what happens? You get measles cancer. You get these cancers of measles poking up.
Megan makes a good point. She says, we now have a vaccine for cancer, and people are still resisting it. Vaccine for a cancer.
For a cancer, yes. HPV.
Yeah.
HPV-related cancers, which are several cancers, but one type of virus, many subtypes. And yeah, exactly, people resist it. You could probably develop a vaccine for all cancers and people would resist it. I bet there are people who would resist an Ebola vaccine, even though, you know, an Ebola, say, let's say it becomes an outbreak in the US, they still wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Because they're so ideologically in this sort of mindset of you do not violate the sanctity of my body with your toxins. Oh, then die of Ebola.
Let me ask you this. I had heard recently somewhere, you know, that you're supposed to get revaccinated as an adult.
Depending on what the vaccine is.
Yeah.
So some people will say, yeah, you can lose MMR immunity. But 98%, I mean, there's a large percentage of people who do get lifelong immunity, but there's some who don't. There's some who even never develop primary immunity. They just don't have whatever their genetic structure is, their immune system is different.
I got the Tdap recently, but that's the only one I've
had. Tdap,
every 10 years.
Exactly, right? And tetanus in particular. And pertussis is one of those things, so people who have been immunized have been coming down with pertussis. And the thought is that the immunity wanes. And remember, like we have decades of experience, but at the same time, in a perfect community immunity situation, you never find out because there are enough people immunized that the virus never gets a strong or the bacteria never gets a stronghold.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, now we're starting to test those things because they are getting strongholds again because of stupidity. It is funny, you know, we've talked about anti-vaxxers. Many of them are incredibly intelligent, and then the rest of them are just borderline intellectually disabled.
Oh.
Like the kind of memes they make.
Yeah.
Like I was sending you, like they make memes with me in them. I'm like, you know, this is not, A, it's not funny. B, it's not clever. C, it's stupid. 4, it's poorly done.
It really is like having a 7 or 8 year old child come up to you and be like, look at this, isn't this funny? And you're like, not really.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Billy, this is very funny.
Yeah.
It's very funny. Now put your helmet on and get back on the bus. sorry, that wasn't appropriate. I told you I goaded a... So an anti-vaxxer on Twitter was trying to attack me about my HPV stuff. And so I never do this, but I decided, it was funny. I woke up that day and I was kind of pissed off and in a bad mood. I'm like, I'm going to cause some fucking trouble on Twitter. So I went on Twitter and I saw this woman was attacking me. So I started going back at her and, you know, kind of basically ridiculing her complete lack of knowledge about anything.
Of course.
And it goaded her to the point where I was starting to get immature with her. I was like, well, you're dumb and you're also stupid and you probably eat, you know, cereal without milk, you know, just stupid stuff. And she wrote back and she said, you guys are retarded and don't care about children or something. And I'm like, oh, the R word from someone who purportedly is going to bat for children who might become autistic from these vaccines. I'm like, oh, you're a very special person. And she immediately deleted her entire account and all this other stuff. Wow. She, so I actually goaded her into showing a little bit of stupidity.
True colors.
Yes, but I did screen cap it and reposted it because I'm vicious. I'm vicious online. Like, if this is about the health, this is about the safety and health of the public and children. And it's like, if you can't get your shit together and you're going to come at me, I will fucking destroy you. Like, mercilessly. I'll never stop.
Tony says, during Desert Storm, we had to get anthrax vaccines. I got 3 of the 6 before I retired. Even with 3, I'm supposedly good for life. So bring it on, Saddam.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, Saddam.
Bro, we got Saddam, bro.
Dude. So Tom pulls up the other day. He goes, Z, you've probably forgotten this, but we're going to watch it right now. It's Chappelle's skit from Chappelle's Show, Black Bush.
Oh, it's, for anybody who hasn't, you really should Google it. I cannot repeat any of it for you because I'm not allowed to say the N-word.
That's right.
But it's amazing. And when you watch it, you kind of realize that Black Bush is basically just Donald Trump. Because Chappelle is like calling on reporters. He's like, damn, why'd I call on this guy? Why you always got to be like this, bro? You know?
Oh, man. It's so good. He's like, they're trying to kill my dad. They're trying to kill my dad. It's so good. Highly recommend. Brian Palmer, after stem cell transplant, I will have to be revaxxed. But until I'm able, I'm in danger from all these anti-vax people. So Brian Palmer having a stem cell transplant means his immune system set back to 0, which means his humoral immunity and his cellular immunity is going to be jacked up, which means he has to be revaccinated. And like he says, he's one of the people who's in that gray where you are literally putting his life in danger by not being vaccinated.
Adeline says, I like hearing your thoughts on the role of shaming anti-vaxxers. We know it doesn't change minds, yet it still might be the best approach. How do you know when shame is your best bet and where do you draw the line?
Yeah, and we've talked about the distinction between shame and guilt. Shame is probably the wrong word. You want to make them feel guilty for being completely idiotic. So I think it works in the sense, okay, I think shaming these people works by proxy on people on the fence. So let me explain what I'm saying. Shaming someone directly is a very hard, there's not a lot of evidence that that's going to do anything but cause them to entrench. However, shaming someone's idol or someone who's kind of influencing someone. So in other words, I'm a dad on the fence about vaccines because I've heard some stuff. Then Z-Dog MD comes on and he is shaming the fuck out of someone I thought was credible. You know, Andrew Wakefield or Del Big Dick or one of these guys. I'm going to watch that. I'm entertained. And it's interesting because he's making good points. And he really, really, really thinks this guy is a turd. Now, it turns out the guy doing the shaming is a pretty credible motherfucker. So, but in that way, I get a lot of messages from people who are like, I changed my mind because of X that you did. And sometimes it does involve, you really made some points about Jenny McCarthy or whatever that I hadn't thought about. So in that sense, I think guilting and shaming works. Now, on them directly, no, on the delusional cult people, no, you're not gonna change anything. You get them to entrench.
Man, it's so hard because shame is almost like a religious precept, you know. And
right.
And now that we've lost religious institutions writ large in society, you know, politics and things like this, and nutrition, whatever, have become the new religion.
That's right.
And so it's very tricky because I'll give you climate change as an example. Climate change is like a religion of the left, and you have people like AOC who are like, you know, they have the Green New Deal and all this crazy gibberish. Climate change is real. I'm not a climate change denier, but I don't know that we're going to solve it with personal responsibility or individual choices. Like, I think we have to invent some new technologies to solve it.
Yeah.
You know? But if I start having the nuanced conversation with people, they go like, oh, you don't believe in climate change?
Right, right.
And it's
right,
like, right. No. Yeah. I believe in
it.
I don't. In fact, I don't believe in anything.
Yeah, I believe
the scientific
in science.
Consensus seems to be that we are, exasperating
human
climate change.
Yeah, human induced climate change. Right. Now, so, climate change is fascinating because this is a great example of the intersection of science and politics. And vaccines are actually similar that way. So the intersection looks like this. You have the scientific consensus that the Earth is warming. No doubt. You have a scientific consensus that it's human-induced, and there's lots of evidence for why that is. Now, yeah. you can argue a little bit back and forth, that's fine, but the consensus right. is that. And so, you know, 9 out of 9 climate scientists will believe this, and there's one guy who's like smoking weed who's like, no, maybe, and you have to have mm-hmm. contrarians in any space. Yeah. You do. So here's, why is that then not accepted? It's because it violates a certain ideology, and it's spun in a certain way. So on the left, it's spun as, big government and corporations are bad, man. We need to protect Mother Earth. And that means you need to stop using plastic, bro. Okay, that's the ideology on the left. On the right, which is a business-minded, more capitalist sort of thinking, oh, wait, you're trying to tell me that making cars, which are good for the U.S. economy, digging up coal, making oil, burning oil, which is the cheapest way to have energy, you're going to stunt our economy because of shit you're saying? Well, now my ideology is going to push back and say, well, it's probably not even true what you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah.
So this is the problem. Now, you're right. I think actually, if we go to both sides and go, listen, let's be really honest. Individual choice is going to do nothing to drop the 480 parts per million of CO2 in the right. atmosphere. It's going to take a major concerted push of technology to get us beyond oil and also do carbon sequestration.
It's so hard to get people to be pragmatic about things. Like take the abortion debate, which we've talked about on the show. And, you know, my position on the abortion debate is that if a fetus is non-viable, it's non-viable. Like if it's incompatible with life, it's incompatible with life.
Right.
So that should be the cutoff, in my opinion. Wherever science has put now we have artificial surfactant, you can keep 22 and 23 weekers alive and things. So okay, pre-22 and 23, that's probably okay to have an abortion, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I'm pro infanticide. Actually, yeah. I think we should leave kids on the mountain.
Super late term abortions.
Super late. Yeah, in fact. I think 18 should be the cutoff because there's some kids that you're just like, you know what? It would be better if you were never had.
But it's so hard to get people to be pragmatic about anything.
No. They, because it's emotional. We're emotional creatures. Yeah. It's hard. But if you can actually.
Well, also that's sort of how politics works, right? It's like, you know, you don't care at all until some guy comes around and be like, here's reasons you should care.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
First of all, they're killing babies. You know,
Yeah. What do you think of this Lucy Flores, Joe Biden thing?
The where he was rubbing her shoulders.
Yeah, and
he
like, and gave she was her like, creepy, it was creepy.
Creepy kiss on the head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Biden looks creepy to me. I buy it.
It's funny.
I love that, you know, the Democrats are going to be undone by, let's not get too political on this episode, but just the Trump's playbook, I just don't know that he can be beat. You're going to have to fight fire with fire to beat Trump.
Fight fire with fire, you know? Yeah, I agree.
You're just going to have to be like, yeah, I kissed her. I'm a creep. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's how it's going to happen. Yeah. That's what Trump would do.
Yeah. Well, you know, Biden didn't apologize. He said, yeah, I'm going to work on my personal space, I guess.
I actually think that everybody has learned a terrible lesson from Trump, which is that the playbook is now to never apologize.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, we have to create space for apologies in reasonable,
appropriate apologies,
rational discourse.
And how do you do that?
I think a delayed apology by 1 month is the appropriate response.
That's interesting.
You'd be like, I will comment on this in 1 month when the hate has died down.
But you know, I think in order for apologies to make any sense at all, they have to be accepted. So in other words, Sam Harris will say this now. There are situations where now no apology could ever write it, and it can be something as stupid as, you know, Liam Neeson saying, well, when he was younger, he fantasized about killing black people who had raped, you know, his friend was raped by a black person.
Right.
He fantasized about killing black people. It's like, okay, that's terrible. He admitted it. He said this was terrible, but no amount of apology would be accepted by people, which is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of apology is it has some value if it's made sincerely. Now, you could question sincerity of apologies, but that means looking at the entire pattern of someone's behavior and also how they deliver the apology and, you know, how, you know, sincerity and those kind of things.
I want to read this one from Adeline, who says, I think climate change is a great example of our inability to properly account for outcomes that occur in the far future. As a population, we're terrible at delaying gratification. The bad outcomes from climate change are just too far in the future for us to care about doing anything today, which is the same as, you know, why should I care about measles, mumps, or rubella?
Yeah.
There's no measles, mumps, or rubella around.
Yeah.
All right, if it starts popping up again like it did in New York recently,
yeah,
then I'll go get the shot.
Yeah.
You know?
Another good example of that is like the national debt. It's like, well, we can't, this is going to be a problem for our kids, but let's just go ahead and spend a shit ton of money on stuff that we have no idea whether it works.
Yeah.
Right? Unintended consequences.
Well, the national debt is just a matter of, we print money as a matter of that's how we do business.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like inflation is a tax that you don't have to have anybody vote on.
Right.
So they're just going to keep inflating the currency.
That's right.
Now you can't have it too high or whatever. But we're going to live in a permanent state of quantitative easing, and that's the national debt will only grow.
It's already there. Deborah Torek, so I have a friend who quit eating meat because cow farts cause global warming but drives a gas guzzler. See, that's the thing. On an individual level, these decisions make no sense. You need systemic change.
Yeah.
So look.
Oh, and people love to do this. Like, I have a buddy who's like, you know, pretty liberal, hippie, crunchy, granola type, and he just bought a Tesla. And we both used to have Chevy Volts, which is a hybrid electric gas car.
Yeah.
And he bought a Tesla, and I bought a Tahoe V8, you know. And he was like, I can't believe, man, you don't care about the environment. And I was just like, bro, I'm carbon neutral at this point because I've been driving an electric car for like 3 years. So I've done more offset than most people.
Yeah.
And I want a big SUV. Right. So I'm going to buy one.
Right. Yeah. Well, the bottom line is, like, until you change the incentives, people are going to go where the incentives are. It's cheaper to drive. The gas is relatively cheap. A big car is more comfortable. Well, you're going to buy that. So until you change the paradigm of that, or you make them self-driving cars or make electric cars cheaper, people are going to do what they do. So what we ought to be doing is focusing on the bigger picture stuff. Now, you could argue that that's not being done at all.
Now, I don't want to get too wonky, but I have a theory where I can connect all. Who's calling you?
It's
who's
not a call. I set my alarm because I have to check in for Southwest. Okay, hold on. Before you tell me your theory, let's see what kind of boarding pass I'm going to... Actually, tell me your theory. You have a minute.
Okay, so here's the thing is... I actually have a theory that monetary policy is the cause of global warming.
Tell me why.
So when you have a inflationary currency like we do and you keep printing and everything, you cause misinvestment and misallocation of capital resources. Mm. And what that ends up producing in our current society is just a bunch of cheap plastic crap.
Garbage.
And that ends up in the ocean and, you know what I mean? So really there is a direct correlation between monetary policy and climate change.
I don't disagree with you. And again, because I'm an incentivist, like I think people's incentives drive everything. And that's why systems design matters.
And the way money is structured is the big incentive that is driving pretty much everything. All of our behaviors.
All right, here we go. Here it's exactly 10:45.
What'd you get?
I still have to. It has to let me check in. It says details. Now, why is it not letting me check in? Hold on. 10:45. Details. Check in. Here we go. Okay. Wait for it. Check in again. 8:21. Motherfucker. That's like a terrible number.
A21. That's what you got.
I'm A-list preferred,
bro. I often get
like A16.
You don't get that early bird.
Dude, early bird's for losers, man. I'm not paying. Actually, you don't need it when you're A-list preferred. Now I got to put my boarding pass in my phone. Thank you, Southwest, for fucking me again. By the way, my favorite seat on Southwest is the emergency row where they have just two in a row.
Robin Fridge says, LOL, this is a Bitcoin pitch, isn't it? They're getting wise to me, Z.
Yeah, I know. I know it right away.
I keep slipping it in all the time.
I'm like, here comes a Bitcoin pitch. But you know what? He's going to do it sneaky this time. He's not going to mention Bitcoin. He's just going to say, monetary policy does determine incentives that end up with plastic in the ocean and dead dolphins. So if you want a fucking dead dolphin, then you better fucking, you know, just think about your monetary policy, which of course all roads lead to the coin.
Hey, as long as I'm getting people to think about the way money is structured, and hopefully we can end the Fed at some point because I'm definitely one of those guys.
Not a fan of the Fed. not a fan.
Just fly with one of the kids so you get priority boarding. But then you can't sit in an exit row.
And that's also not true. So when you have a child, you board between A and B. You board between A and B. So
if you have a small child, you pre-board.
I'm not even sure about that, actually.
Yeah, you are.
On Southwest?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Pretty sure.
Have you done it?
Pretty sure. No. But I've seen it.
Okay.
I've seen it done because I remember being like, I'm jealous of these fucking people.
Way in Z-Pack, if you've pre-boarded before the A group on Southwest, you can do it on other flights.
Debbie Daniels says, I can handle delayed gratification. After all, I'm being calm while waiting to win the lottery.
There it is. That's about as delayed as it gets.
Take that Bitcoin logo off the screen, goddammit.
You motherfucker, Logan. Tony Santora, pay the $15, bro. No, because Tony, as A-list preferred, I'm always guaranteed something in the low A's, whereas early bird on Southwest only guarantees you like where you're in line with the other early birds. So you can still get A60. Let's see. Gas isn't cheap in Georgia. It's $3.69 a gallon. Regina Philpa. It's all going up everywhere, actually.
It's been 27 minutes and I haven't heard about xylitol yet, Melissa.
Xylitol? Why would we talk about xylitol? I don't understand. It's delicious, nutritious, and it prevents cavities and sinus infections, but I mean, There's nothing about xylitol.
So good.
Made by a company called Clear that we know nothing about.
You know, it's funny. It's funny that we did one small sponsorship with them and they left their products here. We've all just been eating xylitol.
Nonstop.
Nonstop.
If we let a dog in here, the dog would die. I know. Because it's fatal to dogs.
That's true.
You know how it works? You know how it kills dogs?
Yeah.
The xylitol fools the dog's body into thinking it's a real sugar. The dog releases insulin. They become hypoglycemic and die. Refractory hypoglycemia. It's no good. I was thinking of buying xylitol, says Alex Brunello. There you go. We're incepting him.
Tom, would you prefer to let the market work without any smoothing to allow deflation? Yes. Yes, I would.
Repeat that question. That was wonky as fuck.
Yeah, it's too wonky. We won't get into it.
Oh, okay.
The atrocity of modern air travel brings tears to those of us who remember flying before 9/11, Liz says.
I know.
You know, I went to North Carolina for a beach vacation or whatever when I was a kid. Or South Carolina, because we were near Myrtle's Beach.
It's like Hilton Head.
This place called Polly's Island, which is fucking great. It's like, it's beautiful there. Anyway, but I was like 11, a total pyromaniac. So I came back with like a full suitcase full of Zippos and butane lighter fluid.
Oh, you could just bring on the plane?
It was carry-on. I'd carried it on.
Amazing.
Like, I had, like, literally, I must have had total a gallon of butane lighter fluid. Nobody cared. Nobody stopped me. Nobody checked. This must have been in 2000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. By the way, supporters, you're going to get access to a show today where Tom took over the AMA episode and talked about a topic near and dear to all of us. So stay tuned for that. That's coming today. We're doing more and more for supporters, by the way, because...
Yeah, because you guys are the shit.
You guys are the shit. Everyone else can fucking suck a dick. You guys are the shit. You know what's funny is like this podcast that we're doing now is only for supporters, but it goes to the main audio podcast. Mm-hmm. So anyone can listen to the audio. And so they're hearing this going, wait, I can suck a dick? Why? I'm not a supporter. And then they'll be like, I want to be a supporter too. I don't want to have to suck a dick. So hopefully no one has to suck a dick. Save a dick, suck a dick. I'm willing. We wanted to do more Metamojis, but me and Tom just weren't feeling it, man. Like, we just don't know what to do.
Yeah, if anybody has Metamoji ideas, we are open.
Are we really, though?
It's supposed to be our job to come up with this shit. But
I know. We need to do Psych. We need to do Obi-Gyn. We need to do...
Liliana Cook says, supporters rock.
Yeah, they do.
You guys do.
Yeah, they do. Kelsey Kirby caught us live.
Tony says, I used to carry a giant knife when I flew 727s. Security would ask about it. I'd tell them it's to cut my way out of the cockpit.
Oh, man. That's right. Tony's a pilot. Isn't that right?
You know what I like what they do nowadays is have you seen the new thing they do where they push the cart in front of the when the pilot has to use the bathroom?
Yeah, and then they stand there, the air host.
I always think that I could just take a running leap and dive right through that stewardess. Like, I'm just like,
yeah.
I could get in that cockpit if I wanted to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Occasionally they have the burly dude stewards, right?
Uh-huh.
And you're like, well, I bet I could take him too, in your mind, right? And then the reality is the air marshal gets up out of the first row and tases you right in the balls.
Although there's not enough air marshals to be on every flight.
That's right. It's a bit of a crapshoot. Did you guys see there's 4 new Animoji with the update? We did, Liliana. In fact, we looked at some of them. Here, maybe I'll show people what that looks like.
Do an annoying therapist emoji, Donna says.
All right.
I'm into that.
I can do that. Let me see here. I need to use a...
I don't like the Medmoji, says Jennifer.
How dare you, Jennifer?
They're a little childish.
Yeah,
I agree.
A little. All right, these are the new ones.
What would you guys like to see more of, since we're just all chatting with the supporters? Oh, there's a giraffe.
There's a giraffe, and then you've got Sharky McShark, and then you've got... Hang on, I bet I could just... No, I can't. I can't show you guys them in action, because like, hello, you won't be able to see it. We'd have to set up another camera. Actually, wait, Tom's camera. Here we go. Okay.
There you go.
All right. Well, wait, it's not working though.
It's too out of focus. It's too hard to see.
I can't see it. Forget it.
That was hard for the audience.
Stupid ass idea. God damn it, Logan. Why'd you think of that? It was dumb.
Ooh, Jay says more of the morning rounds for sure. Hell yeah, bro.
Hell yeah.
Do you guys like want to see more of Z in his bathroom? Because he's moving to a much smaller bathroom.
Yeah. Now me in my bathroom, there's no sofa in the bathroom. There's just a toilet in the bathroom. And that's what I'll be sitting on when I do the show. It's really depressing.
Most people don't have a full couch in their sectional.
You know what? Most people need to upgrade their life. All right. Marie Kondo can suck it.
Upgrade yourself.
Yeah, upgrade yourself.
Treat yourself.
You need to diversify your bonds. Chappelle is the greatest.
We all got screwed that Chappelle wouldn't do more stuff.
Yeah, we did.
You know? Key and Peele are a whack-ass version of Chappelle. Nah. Let's all be real. I like Key and Peele too, but they're not as good as Chappelle.
No, they're not even. They don't even approach the asymptote of Chappelle.
That's right.
Clayton Bigsby, the black white supremacist. Woogie boogie.
You know what, UN? You should just sanction me. Sanction me with your army. Oh, you don't have an army? You should probably shut the fuck up.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. Exactly. Don't forget this. Cunnilingus Rice. We should send her over to Mexico. Let the Mexicans eat her, white power. You know, the first time I saw that skit, I may or may not have been high.
Oh, yeah.
I was watching it going, man, it was like 2000. Like, this is the apex of satirical, political, racial commentary, and it's fucking hilarious.
Jennifer says Bitcoin is Tom Xylitol.
It's true. It's true. You're always shilling it.
I'm like, hey, here's the thing. Z Xylitol is consciousness.
That's true.
Every one of these supporter shows is just Z gets down to the nature of consciousness, and I'm like, yeah, but if we had better money, things could be better.
Exactly, and I'm like, well, money's just a conscious agent. Tom Heinemer is just an icon in our graphical user interface. And by the way, xylitol is delicious and nutritious. I can't imagine being without it. What have we got here?
How about a chaplain emoji? That's interesting.
That's interesting.
My error says.
The owl.
The owl could be the chaplain. Mm-hmm. Hoo-hoo.
Hoo-hoo. Hoo-hoo. Everybody finds God in their own way. Hoo-hoo. We're all connected to a higher purpose.
Do you remember those old owl commercials with the Tootsie Roll Pops?
Yeah. How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll? And he goes, three.
You know what I'm sad about is like your childhood and my childhood, they would play the same commercial for like 35 years.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And now my daughter's never going to get to see those stupid old commercials.
Mikey.
Yeah, exactly.
He likes it.
He likes it. You know? They would, that Tootsie Roll Pop commercial played for 40 years.
Yep. Like, yep. We were just talking about commercial memes. They almost don't happen anymore. Where like it becomes part of the lexicon.
Yeah, we were talking about like, what's up? Or like we were talking about Dilly Dilly recently. But
that was an attempt. It was terrible.
It feels contrived.
Right.
Dilly Dilly. Oh,
but what were the ones we were saying? I slept at a Holiday Inn. Like that's one of them. What was another one?
Budweiser Frogs.
The Budweiser.
Budweiser.
But stuff where you start using it in conversation. Mm-hmm. Like what was the one we were doing earlier?
Oh, it's I'm not a blank, but I just play one on blank.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not a dick, but I play one on YouTube. Right, exactly. These sort of like, verbal memes that go on forever and ever.
Oh, Liliana says the dancing Hershey Kisses for Xmas.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Remember those?
I do.
Dude.
They were...
What about the
raisins?
The raisins.
Oh, dude.
The California raisins.
California raisins. I grew up in Fresno.
Oh, my God.
They were part of like the raisin industry's thing. And so everyone in Fresno was like, that's our shit. And we're like, oh, that's really whack.
Do you also remember when Chevron had the cars?
Yeah.
And then at California gas stations, you could get the cars. Yeah.
They'd be like, stick it in. Stick it in me. Yeah. Fill me up with your lovely gas. You're like, dude, this is gross.
That shit is gross as hell.
Yeah. These cars are way too anthropomorphic. I don't want my car to be a human.
Oh, what about you're not you when you're hungry?
You're not you when you're hungry. Yeah, yeah, that's pretty good. Did someone recommend?
People still say that one, you know?
Yeah. You're not you when you're hungry. You're me.
Regina says, I wish I could get high, but those unannounced pee tests put a halt to that.
Yeah.
Do you think they're actually testing you? Or you think it's just a scare tactic?
It's a scare tactic.
I don't think they actually have the money to send out all the tests. I think, you know what I mean? I think they just make you pee in the cup and then they're
You know what's
like,
amazing is they're testing for like weed, but it's like that's relatively harmless compared to like the alcoholics who are among us constantly, who are coming in hungover.
No, this is true. See, here's the thing is actually you should go out drinking on the weekdays and then be hungover at work because then on your off days, you're not hungover.
That's smart. See? You can't get measles if you die of polio.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Andy Loin. Who's that guy? A derm spends all day on Instagram talking about how youthful Paul Rudd looks at 50. Yeah, that's apparently a meme. Paul Rudd hasn't aged in like 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a handsome man.
He is.
Mm-hmm.
I want that. Let's see. This is your brain on drugs, Christy Columbus. I love the Cali Raisins, Regine Philpo. I do too. Don't.
Oh, yeah. I remember Just Say No.
Yeah. Oh, Just Say No.
Just all of that.
That's horseshit.
Just Say No.
Just Say No to saying no. That was our little spin on it.
The first time you do drugs, you're like, these are awesome. Yeah. Why were they telling me not to do
that? That's exactly what happened. The first time I tried weed, I was like, these motherfuckers have been lying to me.
The first time I did cocaine, I was like, this is all the love I've been looking for in my life. And I just put it right up my nose.
I've never done cocaine.
It's amazing.
I fear my response to that. Only psychedelics and weed. And MDMA.
Like Alex says, I've had two alcoholic coworkers. One was in an office and sat next to me, and the other was at Dollar Tree. You ever know any alcoholic docs that you worked with? Like on
absolutely.
The
right? Absolutely. Yeah. And they used to come into work drunk.
Do surgeries hungover.
And the residents couldn't say anything because we were in a power differential, right? You know, the attending would come in, radiology, smelling a fucking booze.
Yeah.
And one of them ended up getting a liver transplant, actually. And, for unclear etiology. We all knew what it was.
Right.
It's really actually quite depressing because you want these people to be able to get help, but it's so stigmatized that they can't.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the culture of medicine is like be quiet or lest the eye of Sauron turn on you.
I've heard Dr. Drew say this, that, he doesn't understand why in the medical profession, abstinence is the only prescription that you would ever give a doctor for drug abuse.
Yeah.
But in the population, we feel it's okay to put them on Suboxone or methadone. Or
right, right.
No,
right.
If you had a colleague, you would be like, clean your fucking act up.
Yeah, right.
Get the fuck off the shit.
Yeah.
Go to a meeting, do what you got to do,
Right.
That kind of stuff.
But right.
How can we not hold other people to the same standard?
We seem to fantasize that we have a degree of free will and moral agency, which, by the way, is a good lead into next week's AMA episode on free will.
It's about free will and moral
free
agency.
Willy is what we were going to call it until we had to stop Logan from making that the thumbnail triptych. Liver transplants wreck the blood bank. I bet they do, Jay Driggers. I bet they do, actually, for a variety of reasons.
Megan says we have an ER doc who is almost always high on weed, and I don't think the doc can function without it at this point.
Ooh.
Who are these? Here's the thing about stoners is...
Who are these people?
It's just like, why are you high all day every day?
I can't do that. But,
Because I drink, and I occasionally smoke pot, and occasionally do pills, because I like to party. But...
I'm really glad you don't have a medical license, really.
But it's like, first of all, I don't have the gene for addiction. I would have been addicted at this point. I've done all the addictive shit.
That's probably true.
And second of all, I don't do it all the time. I do it sparingly.
PRN.
Every once in a while.
Yes, as needed.
Yeah. Once every 2 weeks, I'll have some drinks,
Professional stoners are an interesting thing because I can't wrap my head around why. But then again, it's because I can't wrap my head around why. In other words, I'm not in their skin. There's something going on there that they're medicating, and they feel like they're better people being high than not. Now, there's a piece of that I understand. At low doses, I become a better person. I'm more, friendly and open. But that feels artificial to me. And then the downside of it is that sort of stoner haze and the amotivational piece. And some people use it for chronic pain and all that. Look, to each his own, but it doesn't mean I have to understand it because I can't. I can't wrap my head around it. I always feel like they're medicating a problem that ought to be root addressed, and it would make their life a lot better than having to come to work high, which mm-hmm. seems squirrely. Look, I can't even function when I'm super high. I don't understand how you go to work.
GNC Crownover says, my daughter's gyn doc just got a DUI. She's a good doc, though. Had a bad night. So should we judge her forever?
I'm with him.
I will tell you, though, as somebody who had a DUI that was reduced to a reckless driving because I had a good lawyer when I was 20, that by the time you're caught for a DUI,
you've done a lot
of drinking and driving. Because by the time I was caught for one, I must have done hundreds.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
Yeah. That's the thing. So what that person needs is help.
Yes.
You don't judge them. You say, okay.
At this day and age, too, you should take an Uber. Because I like to get drunk, but I take an Uber now.
It's becoming less and less socially acceptable, right? It's never been socially acceptable to drive drunk, but people are always like, well, what else am I going to do? It's like, well, now it's like, no, you have a fucking easy answer. Leave your car in the parking lot, text the fucking Uber,
totally,
and go home, and then you can take an Uber back the next day.
Yeah.
It's not even expensive. It's much cheaper than a DUI or killing someone or yourself.
I shouldn't teach people how to do this, but the way you get out of your DUI too, by the way, is you refuse all the tests.
Oh.
They say, you do this test, do that test. You say, no, I refuse. They will take you to jail. Then you will have your blood alcohol tested many hours later, especially if it's on a busy Friday night, Saturday night. And then your blood alcohol will be much lower. And then when you go to trial, you'll be able to have it thrown out. Just saying.
I mean, this is all theoretic.
I didn't grow up with white privilege or anything. I'm just saying, this is how the legal system works.
Oh, this is the supporter only show, people. There's no Uber here. Small town, JNC Crown over. Now, that's a good point. So that means we need to get Uber where you are. That's,
I always like going to those small towns that have like one guy who does Uber.
Yeah.
And then he'll just give you his phone number.
Oh, I know.
And then you just pay him in cash.
I had that in Mississippi when I spoke at I forget the name of the hospital down there. And there was one Uber guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, bro, next time you're in town.
I'm when we go up to Big Bear, California, it's like that. Like we literally just call this dude Frank. And we're like, hey, Frank, take us to the bar. And then, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Did we do it? I think we did it. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
We done did it, fools.
Xylitol?
Hey, I just want to say xylitol is delicious, and it's nutritious, and apparently it can cure all the things.
You know, if it weren't for xylitol, I think my life would have long ago been off the rails. I would have been high on crack. I would have been having hoes, clocking a grip. And instead, I just chew delicious and nutritious xylitol, non-absorbed sugar alcohol that may well change your life as well.
I used to be one of those people who would... Put a service dog vest on my regular dog and take him on the airplane. You know, an asshole. But now after xylitol, I don't do that anymore. Changed my life.
I used to be the kind of person who would cut in a rental car line at your destination airport. I was the kind of person who would go to a Cinnabon at my departure airport until I started spry xylitol gum. Xylitol changed my life, Tom Honneburn. It can change yours.
Yeah. I used to pick up hookers and beat them to death. But not after xylitol. Now I stay clean.
I used to drive a hybrid before xylitol. Now I have a Chevy Tahoe because I'm like, fuck those hoes. Xylitol. Fucking them hoes since 1994. Oh, we did it, Tom Heinever. We did another episode of Supporter Only Morning Rounds with Tom and Z. I want to thank the supporters for being very tolerant. Very, very tolerant. Of bad behavior. In fact, encouraging it. What do you think, Tom? Should we go out with a... Oh, nice, Logan. Xylitol logo. Robin Wilk. I guess he had a Xylitol logo there.
Listen up, guys. You're just going to have to get yourself some Bitcoin really and some Xylitol. And just know that it's all consciousness.
And we brought it home. The thumbnail. Hold up the Xylitol, Tom Heinever, for the thumbnail.
We'd be shilling it.
Xylitol.
Wait, I got to get just that right. Where's my glare?
Yeah, there it is.
Oh, it looks beautiful now.
Oh, yeah. You can't see it. Yeah, I love it. Thanks, guys. We out. Hey, it's Dr. Z. Thanks for getting through the whole episode. That's a huge accomplishment. And so at this point, I just got to ask you for a few favors because it just helps us so much if you leave a review on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe. It just really helps the algorithm to get this message out to others. The second thing is email me, hello@zdogmd.com. I get all these emails personally. I can't respond to them all, but I need to hear your voice because especially on podcast, we don't have a comment section. And I want to hear how this episode affected you, what you'd like to hear in the future, what you think we got wrong, what we think we got right, anything, or just say hi. So that's really powerful. And the third thing is, financially, it helps us a lot to support the show in any way you can. And if you go to zdogmd.com/supporters, you can join our supporter tribe on your favorite platform, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, wherever. What that will get you on those platforms is live shows with me that are exclusive for supporters and access to our Zoom meetings where we talk about awakening realization and we share with each other our own experience. It's a powerful group effect. It's a community, really. And we support and love each other and share, again, through our own experience, how we're waking up. So, and that ripples out into systems, into transforming healthcare and education and government. So it really starts with us. So join us there if you can. Again, zdogmd.com/supporters. And I'm so grateful to have you with us.